Let me begin by expressing my gratitude to Anne Dighton and Gwendolyn Sasse and their department for inviting me to attend this workshop, which I would immediately qualify as extremely timely, and I'll explain why, but also to express my satisfaction at seeing here my former boss, the Right Honourable Terry Davies, who led our organisation for 5 years and with whom I had many, many hours of work and good conversations. I was saying that the subject of Council of Europe Convention, I'm talking from the perspective, and I will try to introduce into this workshop the perspective of the practitioners. The organisations I belong, has almost never heard about this concept of norm entrepreneurship. It is even difficult to pronounce, and therefore it is a concept which is sounds relatively or totally foreign to the Council of Europe. At least I've never read about it, but maybe the examples and the elements of my contribution may help in enriching the discussion from a specific perspective, which is the Council of Europe perspective. And in the Council of Europe, the issue of the conventions and the relevance of the conventions is very much à la mode, as the French say. In its 60 years of existence, the Council of Europe has adopted more than 200 conventions on a very wide variety of topics. And in the context of proposals for reforming the organisations which are underway, the idea of a critical review of the convention has emerged of one of the Secretary-General's, the new Secretary-General, priorities, with a view to providing the basis for measures to increase the visibility and the impact and the number of parties to these 210 conventions. In February 2011, less than a year ago, the Secretary General submitted to the Committee of Ministers an outline of convention review proposing a classification. I hope I'll have the time to give some elements of that classification in accordance with the relevance of conventions, and a proposal for a plan of action to increase the impact and visibility of these conventions. And this work is currently underway. In the same vein, very recently the Parliamentary Assembly adopted a resolution for the reinforcement of the effectiveness of Council of Europe treaty law, particularly in its special fields of expertise of human rights protection, democracy, and the rule of law. In its reply to the Parliamentary Assembly, the Committee of Ministers stressed that the COE conventions constitute a unique integrated system of legal standards collectively defined within the organisations and agreed upon by member states. I will not dwell on the Council of Europe. It is a pleasure to be in a place where, as has been said by someone else before, people know to differentiate between the Council of Europe and the European Union. This is not a surprise, but it is a very satisfying situation. Let me simply say a few things about the Council of Europe, which explain the framework in which the treaty making takes place. And I would say I'm not sure that the idea of the drafters of the treaty was precisely that the convention, that the Council of Europe would be an organization who would prepare such a high number of treaties, a treaty-making organization. They spoke rather about policies, discussions, common agreements, etc. In relation to my predecessor's intervention, I would like to quote the former commissioner of human rights, who said, used to say that if the Council would have to adopt today the European Convention of Human Rights, it wouldn't be able to do so. But there are a number of points that are relevant for this framework where the treaty making has developed. First, the competence of the organisation. It is a universal competence, with the only exception of the issue of defence. It's for historical reasons. Therefore, a very wide scope of action. Secondly, its nature is that of a classic international organisation. There was this morning this fascinating idea that we are becoming a supranational, but I think I would judge that as being slightly over-optimistic if you leave aside the issue of the court. And then about its organs. The Council of Europe has only two statutory organs, the Committee of Ministers, which is the executive body, and the consultative, or how it's called now, the parliamentary assembly. There are some hesitations about whether the Congress of Local and Regional Authorities, established by the Committee of Ministers, is or can be considered a statutory body, although very often is quoted as such. I would like to point out that the European Court of Human Rights, which is the judicial body created by the Convention on Human Rights, it is not a statutory organ of the organisation, but it has become an organ of paramount importance for the influence it may exercise through its ruling in legal reform in the member states. So, by using the mechanism of the court, it has been possible for a number of actors or entrepreneurs to push forward ideas of legal change in a number of legal systems. We must recall that the court delivers binding rulings in relation to the individual complaints about human rights violations. And also another feature which is worth commenting maybe is that the CM has, the Committee of Ministers has the power to create steering or ad hoc committees for specific subjects which are directly answerable to it, and so has the Parliamentary Assembly. As to the treaty making, the Statute of the Council of Europe, the first time it talks about conventions is in Article 15, and there are very few references to conventions in the Statute of the Council of Europe. Is Article 15 reads that of the recommendation of the Assembly or on its own initiative, the Committee of Ministers shall consider the action required, very general, including, that's the only possibility, the conclusion of conventional agreements and the adoption by governments of common policies with regard to particular matters. This provision was supplemented as early as 1951 by a resolution of the Committee of Ministers, which provided that the conclusion of the Committee of Ministers may, where appropriate, take the form of a convention. In that event, that a convention should be submitted to the Secretary General, who was instructed to submit the convention for ratification to member states. And it says the conventional agreement shall be binding only on such members as have ratified it. This resolution was, however, never applied. It stemmed from Article 19 of the ILO Constitution, International Labour Organization, and the impediment to this implementation of this rule was that the fundamental difference between the ILO and the COE conventions were the ILO is able to prepare conventions which would be then applicable to all the member states, The Council of Europe, the nature of the Council of Europe conventions is entirely different. Conventions and agreements concluded within the Council of Europe are not legal acts of the organization from a legal point of view. They are, in respect of the legal existence, instruments between a certain number of states which have expressed by ratification their consent to be bound by the provisions they contain. Thus, this international treaty owes their legal effects to the expression of the will of the contracting parties alone, realized outside any procedure followed within the Council of Europe. However, in spite of this independence with regard to the legal existence, there is still a close link between the conventions elaborated within the Council of Europe and the organization itself. This link is visible in the fact that the Council of Europe has made available the institutional and administrative framework required for the multilateral negotiations, and the CM, the Committee of Ministers, which has the last word on the draft text, and which deals with amendments, with protocols, and which pays the bill of any monitoring mechanisms that are created. The Secretary General of the Council of Europe is the depository of all the treaties, and this work is exercised through the Treaty Office. I brought with me some leaflet which explain the functioning of the Treaty Office, which is the custodian of all Council of Europe conventions. In the already quoted resolution of the Parliamentary Assembly on reinforcing the effectiveness of Council of Europe treaty law, the Assembly welcomed the fact that the Council of Europe has laid the foundations of an innovative and coherent body of European law, particularly in its special fields of expertise, and noted that this body of conventions covering the entire continent forms the basis for a Europe without dividing lines. Moreover, the numerous references made by the European Court of Human Rights to all the Council of Europe conventions witnesses is a form of recognition of their importance as an element of the common European legal heritage. The strength of the Council of Europe lies in their formality and the fact that they are legally binding on those states which have accepted them. Many even include mechanisms to follow up their implementations at domestic level. Contrary to the EU norms, however, which may become directly part of the domestic legal order, the Council of Europe treaty making system is more flexible, and it facilitates in this manner the negotiations. States know that at the end they will still have the possibility of not joining a convention. However, when they do, they incur legal obligations which are enforceable under international law. Thus, in addition, many Council of Europe treaties have had an immediate impact. The example of the convention is one of them, but we could quote the Pharmacopoeia or the treaties on social security, which have had a direct impact in the life of European citizens. The weakness of the system is the frequent slowness of the adoption process, and more importantly, of the ratification process. We could quote here the example of the very important Protocol 14 to the European Convention, which took so many years to be finally ratified by all countries. And I think Terry Davies knows a lot about that topic. But I would like to stress that there is no obligation to ratify the treaties even after having voted in favour of that treaty in the Committee of Ministers, because such a vote does not entail any commitment to proceed to ratification, a decision which lies ultimately with each individual state. The first convention adopted by the Council of Europe was the European Convention of Human Rights, which has been completed by 15 protocols. The others, the subjects of the other conventions originate in different ways. The initiative to draft a new treaty may come from the Committee of Ministers, the Assembly, the Congress, or conferences of specialized ministers.
We're going to be brutal.
Yeah.
If you could do the last bit, and then perhaps we could circulate the centre bit of the paper.
Yeah.
That would be
okay.
Or
a steering committee itself may be the one which takes the initiative. Statistically, it's been the Parliamentary Assembly which is at the origin of the biggest number of treaties. However, before the initiative is launched by one of the bodies I have mentioned, there is often considerably preparatory work involving non-governmental organizations, professional organizations, academia and civil society. Initiatives to draft a treaty are often preceded by conferences on topical issues, hearings of parliamentary committees, feasibility studies. In addition, NGOs play an increasing role as observers in many steering committees, and there is a conference of NGOs with consultative status which meets regularly and which is given a voice in high-level meetings, and they are therefore able to exert an influence in the establishment of the priorities of the organizations. I will not go into the many of the issues that I intended to mention. Maybe they will come during the discussion. Just a word about classification of Council of Europe conventions. As I said, the Council of Europe treaty series spans a wide variety of subjects in which conventions have been adopted. This diversity stems from the broad mandate given to the organization. From a substantive point of view, the Treaty Office website has classified the conventions on 50 different subject matters. It being understood that some conventions may belong to several of these groups. There is this recent initiative to streamline and simplify the presentation of this wealth of conventions, which suggests to classify them in four groups: institutional affairs, human rights, rule of law and judicial cooperation, and democracy. And there is another attempt to classify them by the present relevance in four different groups: key conventions.
Excuse me, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
Yeah, active conventions, conventions with few ratifications or limited applications, and inactive conventions. In addition, there is a group of conventions which should be would be worth to update. I think I'll stop here because the constraint is there, and maybe I can talk later about some of the trends in modern Council of Europe conventions and the challenges for treaty making that the organisation is facing. Thank you.
Thank you very much.